Sit. Go! Keep pushing! Push! Push!
At the 2016 Olympics, 80 million displaced people were represented for the first time. They entered the arena as the refugee Olympic team, and their flag was the Olympic rings. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and today on Earshot, we're featuring two refugees living in Australia who dream of competing at the Olympic Games. Later, sprinter Buster, from living under a bridge to dominating the track. But first, the ABC's Mike Williams visits martial artist Asif Sultani.
So the things that we use for conditioning, as well as we've got some medicine wall over there if you want to have a look.
You seen Rocky?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You ever just imagine you're in Rocky when you're picking up one of these things?
Rocky's just a movie, but I'm real.
Asif gets annoyed by Hollywood movies. He thinks they don't show enough of the sacrifice, what it takes to succeed.
I remember in 2014, one of my friend and I, we used to compete together.
The New South Wales World Cup Championship was coming up.
He wanted to go to that competition and then retire after that. And of course, every martial artist wants to retire and then win their last fight at least, right? So Ali and I, we went to the New South Wales World Cup Championship and we both lost. None of us got placed. And Ali was very upset and he did retire after that. I did promise him and I said, okay, I will continue and I will come in 3 years later to represent us again.
Asif trained for 3 years. Then he came back and won his category. Just like the Hollywood movies, I'm doing it too. Skipping over those 3 years of sacrifice, struggle, and the rest of it, it's understandable why Asif especially gets annoyed by this, because his challenges are harder than most. There isn't a training montage long enough to do justice to the adversity he's faced, not just to win a karate competition, but also to be alive.
When you meditate, what's your technique?
Usually, I focus on my breathing and sometimes I travel in my head and go to the past.
He remembers good times, but also things he'd rather forget.
From that, I grow as a person as well as an athlete. When I was about 7 years old, my family and I were left Afghanistan due to ongoing war, conflict, and persecution.
They arrived at 4 in the morning, 3,000 Taliban in SUVs, and began burning down houses and executing civilians.
Asif's family is Hazara. Hazara make up about 10% of the Afghan population.
And Hazara has been persecuted in Afghanistan for so many years.
And they weren't content to kill just the Hazaras they saw. So they set up a blockade of the Hazara areas so food couldn't get through. More than 1 million people faced starvation.
Asif's family fled to Iran. Along the way, they were stopped by police. All their possessions were taken.
And I was 7 and I was terrifying, crying. And because of that, they start hitting my dad and telling him that keep your kids quiet. And yeah, it was really horrifying memory. When we arrived in Iran, we were not just persecuted for being a Hazara, but just for being a asylum seeker as well as an Afghan Hazara. So I wasn't allowed to go to school because I was an asylum seeker and undocumented. My dad wasn't allowed to get a driving license, for example. People used to bash me, kick me, punch me, spit on me, and humiliating me. And telling me that, like, he's telling me that I had to kill myself because I was never going to be as good as everyone else. I will never have the same opportunity as everyone else. I'm never there. And that sense, it was true. I did not have that opportunity.
With the hope to protect himself, he became interested in martial arts.
And I attend dojo for a couple of months. And then after a few months, the instructor told me that I'm not allowed to go to training because I was asylum seeker and undocumented and from Afghanistan. so therefore I'm not allowed. I was heartbroken and I was questioning myself, like, what's wrong with me being a Hazara? What's wrong with me being a refugee or asylum seeker? What can I do? Why it's me? One day when I was thinking, it occurred to me that if only I can create my dream, then only I can crush it.
Or don't hit back.
So he gathered a few of his mates and began training. He was starting his own backyard dojo.
It wasn't a fancy spot. We did not have anything, really. All I think we had was just courage. That was like a dream and a hope that I had, that one day I will be a successful martial artist.
Mr. Lee? Are you ready?
He took lessons from Bruce Lee's Enter the Dragon.
that helped a lot. I used to watch the same movie over and over again.
Always just Into the Dragon.
Always that one. That one was my favorite one.
O'Hara's treachery has disgraced us.
And I was just watching that and then pretending to be like him and using his technique. And especially his sidekick was my favorite.
Sidekick's name?
It was a sidekick, like... In the movie.
Oh, his actual sidekick.
His
move.
Actual sidekick, yeah.
Not a sidekick character. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
No, that's not it. Most of the time, I used to train by myself.
When he was a teenager, Asif was walking down the street in Iran. He got stopped by police. They realized he was undocumented and decided to send him back to Afghanistan.
I was 16 years old. I was alone by myself and I was terrified.
Did you see your parents before you got deported?
Yeah, my mom came to say goodbye to me. It was behind the bar.
At that time, women seeking asylum were not deported from Iran.
And that was one of the hardest times, seeing my mom trying to embrace me and telling me that I was old enough to look after myself and it's time for me to be brave. And growing up, my dad used to tell me that if you get deported, you have to hide your identity when you're in Afghanistan. Don't tell them that you are a Hazara. I was terrified, like, I couldn't hide my appearance. Unfortunately, my dad couldn't come and see me to say goodbye because they could have deported him as well. Not long after I arrived in Australia, my dad passed away. And it's something that I regret. When I was a kid, I used to blame my dad a lot. And he told me, I will understand one day when I grow up. But we can only learn from the past and keep on moving forward.
You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Asif knew he couldn't stay in Afghanistan.
It's really hard to feel isolated to your own country.
He made his way to Indonesia, and from there he boarded a boat to Australia.
Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
The boat journey was extremely traumatic. I started vomiting and everyone was start vomiting because of the intense smell of the fume on the boat. And it was a small, crappy boat, over 100 people. And we had the option of eating one boiled egg a day. And in the middle of the ocean, the engine stopped working. And that's when everyone was start crying, praying, and fighting over the life jacket, putting the life jacket on. Everyone thought that we are going to die. I honestly thought, like, yeah, that's where I'm going to die, in the middle of nowhere, in the ocean, and my family wouldn't even find my body.
Eventually, the engine kicked in. The boat made it to Christmas Island. Asif spent a few months there in detention. At 17, he was moved to Sydney to community detention.
And when I was 18 years old, I wanted to go to high school. I never had the opportunity to go to school as a kid, but I wanted to just go to school and, you know, learn more about Australian culture, try to integrate to the society. And in order to do that, I need to learn the language.
Asif heard about a school in Maitland, New South Wales, that accepted refugees.
I started from year 10. It was really hard. Like all of them were younger than me. And I'm going to school and telling them I'm 18, I'm just starting high school. They were like, what? How does that happen?
As well as school, Asif found a dojo. He picked up some secondhand gear.
I had to run to dojo early in the morning before school and then run back, have my breakfast, get a shower and then go to school. And I did the same thing in the afternoon.
All that running was a 20-kilometre round trip, 20 Ks running every day just to get to school and training.
Yeah, so I did what I had to do in order to get where I am now.
When did you know that you wanted to pursue a professional sports career in martial arts?
As a kid, the only thing that people could not take away from me was my dream and my hope. And no one could take that away because no one can see it. I didn't know where and how, but I knew one day it will happen.
When Asif saw the 2016 Olympics feature a refugee team, he knew that was his chance. A few years ago, he became the first Australian-based refugee to be awarded an International Olympic Committee scholarship. It doesn't guarantee him a place in the team, but it goes a long way to helping him get there.
The Refugee Olympic team is a very special team. It's a symbol of hope for millions of other people around the world. It unites people through the culture of sports. It represents the power of human compassion. So these are the values that I would like to fight. I'm not fighting for a gold medal. We have 80 million people that has been forcibly displaced. I would like to fight for them in order for them to believe in themselves and their potential. It would be awesome if I can win a gold medal, but at the end of the day, if you are not a good person, a gold medal cannot make you a good person. It's just a piece of metal. I believe I have experienced some of the darkest part of humankind, but I never lost faith in humanity. It's something that I want everybody to know about the refugees. We did not choose our lives. We did not choose to be persecuted, to be separated from our families, or to leave our homelands. We might have lost everything once we knew, but we have not lost the ability to achieve greatness.
Just checking back in, it's been about 2 weeks since I had that chat with Asif, so there's been some news since then. I'm going to call him now and we're going to chat.
Hi, man. How are you, Mike?
Good. How are you? You've been better, I bet.
It has been a really difficult week so far, but yeah, I'm getting on top of it.
Well, there's no easy way to say it. 29 athletes were announced as part of the IOC refugee team. Asif wasn't one of them. He won't be going to Tokyo.
I feel that my dream was crushed after being waiting for this moment for 18 years to finally be part of a team, and now that dream has been taken away again.
You know, I was thinking about what you said about Rocky and how in the movies they don't show things that go wrong enough. And I was thinking how this is kind of that for you.
That's right. You watch a movie, they always have a happy ending. But that's not the truth. Because life is not easy, and easy is not an option.
It's extra painful for Asif because karate, his specialty, will not be featured in the next Olympic Games. This was his only shot.
Does part of you feel like this just isn't fair in a life that's been so difficult? You know, like if you had a country that supported you and you weren't a refugee, you would have had a shot.
That's absolutely right. Like if I had a national team and if I had a country, I would have been definitely a world champion by now, 100%. But I never had that opportunity to travel overseas and compete internationally. Since the day that I fled my homeland, I lost my right. But what can you do? Yeah, look, pain and struggles are temporary, but the lesson of resilience that we learn from that is permanent. And I'm going to just focus on the future and start a new chapter in my life.
Okay, welcome to Top Ride Shopping Centre. We're going to meet our next guest here. Abdullah Yassim, aka Buster, is a sprinter. He also just found out he didn't make the refugee Olympic team. But Abdullah is in his own unique situation.
The news last week about the Olympics, how did you take that?
It's not my chance.
So what happened when you heard the news?
Nothing. Coach just called me and just tell me that. I tell him, oh, it's okay. It's just part of my story, and I just move on. You know, when I was young, one of my friends was having like a American poster.
The poster had a bunch of hip-hop stars on it.
50 Cent, Dr. Dre, like Eminem. And they said, you have to pick.
The only rapper that hadn't been chosen was Busta Rhymes. And that's how Abdullah Yassim got the nickname Busta.
My family life, like, is a little bit hard. Where I grew up, school, they cannot afford for me to pay for me, and I have to drop out from school, those kind of things. Yeah, it's life, because in this world, we'll never be equal. For me, I just appreciate everything I get.
Buster credits his mum for his attitude of acceptance, for both what he's got and who he is. It was a powerful message for him, growing up in poverty in the Gambia.
When did you realize you were fast?
Sometimes we do like a gamble running, five bucks. And there is one guy who normally like be in the national team, and we just live in the same area.
They went to race one day, and the guy in the national team asked for a one-step advantage.
Yeah, and I give him one step, and I just beat that guy.
You gave the guy in the national team an advantage?
Yeah.
And you beat him?
Yeah, and I beat the guy.
A couple of years later, he went to the Gambian sprinting trials where he gave the national champion a run for his money. Their sprinting team asked him to stop playing soccer so he could focus on sprinting and join their team. Buster began to compete for the Gambia at international competitions. Then, in 2018, the Gold Coast Commonwealth Games were approaching, but it was only a last-minute thing for him to go.
I didn't think so I'm going to come even in Australia because of my country was out of the Commonwealth Games. Our former president is a, like, dictator.
Gambia has announced it's pulling out of the Commonwealth. Gambia's government, which is led by President Yahya Jammeh, described the Commonwealth as, quote, a neo-colonial institution.
Gambia left the Commonwealth in 2013, but were readmitted just before the Games.
2 weeks before the game, they just tell me, oh, you guys are going from the Commonwealth Games. I ask, like, which country is hosting the Commonwealth Games? They tell me Australia. And I didn't know Australia. I don't know where Australia located.
For a while, he thought they meant Austria. He got on the plane. After landing, relatives back home got in touch. He was facing serious issues because of his religious beliefs.
Before even my computer, I was having a little bit issue back home, before I just came to the Commonwealth Games. But when I just came here, after the things get more worse.
Then he got a text. The message was clear.
Wherever you are, just stay there. Don't even try to come.
Right, so people back home were saying to you, don't come back.
Yeah. And I just asked them what happened. They say, like, your situation here is getting more worse and worse. I don't know, but for me, I just want to go back. But at the end, I don't know what's going to happen, and I just decided to stay.
That must have been so stressful to get that message.
Yeah, it's stressful. Like, I was a little bit scared because I stay in country, you know. I don't have anyone. I don't know anyone. I'm not going to lie to you, but it was like a little bit tough night for me.
More than a dozen athletes who went missing during last month's Gold Coast Commonwealth Games face the threat of deportation today after their visas expired overnight. The African competitors failed to return home despite warnings from Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton that they should...
A friend said he could help him if he came to Sydney. With 90 bucks in his pocket, he caught a bus. When he got there, his contact wouldn't pick up. He walked around the street.
That's why I just roaming around until, like, I was, most like I was in Para. That's why I still now, I love Parramatta.
He lived rough in Parramatta, finding shelter and food where he could.
Yeah, the things I normally find, like in the street, like eating in the street, just kind of begging people, yeah, what to eat, those kind of things. Yeah, but that's life. In life, you don't expect anything good in life. It's not going to set you back, but it's going to make you stronger. It was pretty hard, but I'm a man.
And then after a week, he did something surprising. He went to the cops.
I went to the police, talked to them, tell them everything about my situation. After the police helped me, take me to a hospital.
Were you nervous about going to the Australian police?
No.
But they could have sent you back.
Yeah, that's true. But they're here to protect people.
Buster was welcomed by the Hope Hostel, which gives accommodation and care to men who face homelessness.
They didn't know me, and they just take care of me, give me food. I've been there almost for 1 year.
You were there for a year?
Yeah. They are really, really good, man. And they just helped me a lot. They just gave me everything. Lunch, dinner, and breakfast, everything.
Buster told a caseworker about his running career and that he hoped to run again. So the caseworker tried to find him a coach.
But all those coaches, they say, like, I have to pay them to train me. And I say, oh, it's okay, don't worry, yeah, because I don't have any money at the time to pay any coach.
He joined a running club, but it wasn't enough. Buster needed a professional coach.
I need, like, someone to guide me, to rectify me if I make mistakes. And I just asked him, like, which place is the biggest? He said, oh, Olympic Park. The following week, I went to Olympic Park.
You just walked in?
Yeah, and I walked in, and I just find them in the ground, and I just talked to them. And they just introduced me to John.
So just your technique stuff, I want you doing these starts. So I want it up to max. So these guys are doing 3-point starts.
Yeah.
You're worthwhile doing it with them?
Of course.
So we'll just do 3 of those, then I want to take you over the bend.
120.
We've got to start.
120, how much?
Just 80. 80. So and you'll come around the bend. We've got to work that bend.
Okay.
All right. Take your time.
John Quinn is an elite sports coach. He's worked at the highest levels of AFL, soccer, swimming, cricket and track and field.
We're at Sydney Olympic Park today. This is our regular training venue. We cover all spectrums here, whether it be wealth, religion, or ethnicity. At the end of the day, who can put their foot in front of the other one quickest? That's all we're really worried about.
When John took Buster on, he didn't know much about him. Over time, the trust grew.
Yeah, it was pretty fortuitous. And so I didn't realise at that stage that he was still in the care of the Salvation Army, and he had to rush off from training before it was finished sometimes. And the reason why, he had to get back to the centre because they locked the doors at a given time of night, and he could certainly would miss a meal, and he might even lose his bed. So he was very anxious to get back. But bit by bit, the trust came and he started to talk a bit more about it.
John gave Buster spikes. He helped him find sponsorship and he coaches him free of charge.
Short the arm.
John told me that you don't coach people for money.
I'm the one supposed to pay John, but John do like a lot of effort in me. Like, he helped me a lot, so many ways.
How do you feel towards him after he's done all that for you?
John's just like a father to me. John, no. Only God can pay John.
He's lived a life that's been very challenging, but he's always there to help the other one up. He's going to make an outstanding coach. He's just a fantastic role model within our squad. You talk about humility. Well, he's humility defined.
Damo is one of Buster's squad mates.
You know, if I'm going something through tough in my own life, and just the way that it's inspiring, you know, you just think you've had a tough day, and then you know that he's been out there, you know, packing shells, just working really hard just so he can come and do the sport. Like, and you just, all that effort, you know he loves it.
Buster works at Australian Welding Supplies doing pick and pack. He says he's learnt so much there. The crew's like a family, same as his training squad. And when he says family, he really means it. Like the time in 2019 when John took the team down to Tassie to run in the professional series.
My coach tell us like to go there to just have a fun, to just run, whatever.
And he went through the rounds and he won the Burnie gift. So we came back from there with $9,500. I mean, from someone that less than a year before that was getting food out of the bins, it's just a fabulous story. But my favourite part of that story was we were at the airport getting ready to come home. And one of the girls, she said to me, "Look what Buster's given to me." I said, "What is it?" And she said, "He's given me $500. I said, "Really?" One of the other athletes said, "Yeah, he gave me $500 too."
Where I grew up and my mom raised me, you don't have to have something and just keep it to yourself, especially you go with a team.
Buster, you've just got some money, mate. Don't go giving it away.
I'm the one who go to Tasmania with no money and I with the money. And I go with Tasmania with a team. I came here with no money, but I go to Tasmania with a team.
Talk about humility, talk about lessons. That was one there.
Buster's happy growing ties in the community. He's engaged to a woman he met through work, and for now, he'll keep running.
For him, at the moment, it's really about the pursuit of doing it and putting everything into it. The bigger goal for us is to get him settled, have him recognised as being a new Australian citizen, and then hopefully, in about 36 months from now, I'm talking to you about Buster representing Australia at the Paris Olympic Games.
If the refugee team come in my way, yeah, I'm going to pass through the way go, but my main goal is, my main priority is to represent Australia.
Safe. Go, 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 go. Okay.
Love you, bye. Take care, stay safe, follow the rules, wear your mask. 1.5 metres, don't forget.
Refugees Chase the Olympic Dream was produced by Mike Williams. The sound engineer was John Jacobs. And be sure to keep an eye out for all 29 athletes competing for the Refugee Olympic Team. We wish them the best. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and I'll catch you next time on Earshot.